I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
It's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of them.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Friday, February 18th, 2022 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It's a wild and dystopic ride and it gets crazier every day, it seems. But we make curious choices. We have the opportunity to choose things. We have choices where in many cases, we don't realize we have choices. And I think in far too many cases, far too often, we actually enslave ourselves. And that's unfortunate because we probably should choose more wisely. Generally speaking, Andrew Breitbart represented one of those people who had come to a point in his life where he knew very clearly where he stood on certain things. I think he understood the landscape of society and that there were certain folks that were trying to, they were working for nefarious ends to beguile and deceive us all. And he had drawn a clear line in the sand and had basically said no, but not in a, he was becoming more and more kind of at peace with things and basically just a self-assured, there's kind of a self-assuredness about him knowing where he stood on these issues and no longer double-minded, you know, steadfast and resolute, if you will. And that's a dangerous thing to the beguilement and deception, that whole agenda. As Henry Louis Mencken, H.L. Mencken, observed, the most dangerous man to any government is a man who is able to think things out for himself without regard to the prevailing superstitions and taboos. And although you know, as Karl Marx observed, religion has been used, it has been weaponized throughout history. Again, that's usually a dance between two parties, typically more today, I would say, than ever before. in history. And so there's a choice to be made. And the most dangerous man to any government is the man who's able to think things out. This is the social contract that he was talking about. And prejudice is that we hold the man who's able to think things out for himself without regard to the prevailing superstitions and taboos. Almost inevitably, he comes to the conclusion that the government he lives under is dishonest, insane, and intolerable. And so, if he is romantic, he tries to change it. And even if he is not romantic personally, he is very apt to spread discontent among those who are. But if you're someone like Andrew Breitbart and you come to peace with all of this in a certain sense, then, I mean, as you can hear in the intro that we play on this broadcast these days, the Hating Breitbart intro, he was not making enemies. He was not fomenting civil unrest. He was actually, I think he was making peace. And that's why, that's the one thing that seems to really get you, that seems to put you on the hit list. If you are steadfast and resolute, you're a great example of, you're solid, you are a complete person within yourself, you're not double-minded, you're not the fractured, broken person that is represented, for example, in the manipulation of human behavior. You look at the, I mean, you can go to Amazon and see that picture of the fractured person, the little marionette there of postmodernist broken pieces, you know, humanist, sociological, cybernetic pieces. You're a whole person. You understand where you stand very clearly on certain things. And you're not sowing the seeds of social discord and societal unrest. You're at peace. You're an example, especially if you're someone like Andrew Breitbart. You have a you have the ability to reach out and touch many lives. You can create a social tipping point. And we feel it every once in a while, don't we? We feel the difference. I mean, we live under the sweltering heat of oppression, generally without realizing it in a variety of ways, but it's largely invisible, and therefore we don't see it for what it is. But every once in a while, someone opens the window, and you get a breath of free air, and it's very refreshing. And then, before you know it, it's right back to the oppression. But the people who have been to the mountaintop, so to speak, and come back are usually, they're changed, and they're not confrontational, and they know where they stand on things. And we've seen those people in history. It reminds me of folks like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. These people that realized that the conflict is part of the game. And so they are steadfastly and resolutely set on love. They are not easily provoked and things like that. Speaking of love, 1 Corinthians 13. So that's interesting. And if we had more of those kinds of people, imagine what kind of a society it would be. This society has a religion. It is a godless religion of scientism predominantly these days. It has many denominations and catechisms, but it is a religion nonetheless. And Albert Pike is kind of at the heart of that. Karl Marx is at the heart of that um, and others, but most people don't realize it. It's a fascinating thing to see it and to perceive it for what it is. So maybe we'll get into that a little bit. Speaking of, I mean, Marxism is everywhere. We should play Professor Paul Fry. Speaking of the academics, that clip that we play every once in a while, the Frankfurt School of Critical Theory, which you can find on YouTube still from 2009, Professor Paul Fry over at Yale, Introduction to Theory of Literature, English 300. Talking about all of these guys at Frankfurt School, Marxism. It's part of the Open Yale courses. Adorno, Walter Benjamin, whatever, Marx, Engels, etc. And, you know, he says it. He throws it out there. You may ask yourself, as we get into perspectives on social literature and art, you may ask yourself, out of idle curiosity or perhaps even peevishly, why Marx? Why so much Marx? And so that's the thing, you know, at the heart of this criticism of everything, first there was the positivism, now there's the criticism of everything. And, you know, I talked about that yesterday. The the controversy between this idea of positivism and the dispute to the ostensible contrary, which is really a false dichotomy. It's the same folks, same character, one character in particular, inventing lies and getting you arguing heatedly over which one is true. So Marx had a religion, and the irony is, you know, when you start reading people like Karl Marx, and I would call him someone who departed from the faith, they know who God is, and yet they're writing this anti-God treatise or diatribe. Every time you read it, becomes more and more hostile, it seems, which, I don't know, for me calls to mind Psalm 2. But it's fascinating to hear the hubris of someone like Karl Marx say, you know, we are observing only what we have created. We are remaking only that which we have created in society and things, knowing that God exists, not acknowledging God at all, and knowing that to say all we are acknowledging and creating or recreating is what we've already created, that is a very prideful statement. And not true. If you and I go away, there are many things that will exist long after we're gone. If we're all gone, there are many things that will exist long after we're gone that we did not create. So, it's a lie, and it's a boastful lie, and calls to mind biblical examples. Nebuchadnezzar is a good one. Look what I have made. Look how fantastic I am. You know what? Go eat some grass for a while and see how the world goes on without you, and look at all of the amazing things that happen despite your existence or lack thereof. It's very humbling. And Romans chapter 1, of course, which I've referred to many times. It's just fascinating to see this juxtaposition and the hysterical animosity that some seem to develop toward the God of the Bible. So, anyway, I want to give you a word of encouragement today. It's Friday. Phone lines are open. So, free long distance, 512-248-8252. Again, 512-248-8252. Toll free, 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. Here's a little encouragement from Oswald Chambers. Today's entry in My Utmost for His Highest. The initiative against despair. Does despair ever arrive? And it's usually, it's self-oriented, it's self-directed, it's self-centered. It's, you know, oftentimes it's false humility. One of my favorite examples is David. He doesn't engage in it. Not this kind of despair that Chambers writes about. Many of us do, though. David is a great example. of devotion and not falling prey to pride and false humility and so forth, which is amazing because, I mean, if you're that guy, pretty spectacular, you know? In his early life, he's contending with bears and lions with his bare hands, essentially. And then, of course, there's the story of the giant that terrifies the entire army, but David's a kid. And, you know, the giant says, "Am I a dog that you'd bring this plaything out to me?" And David basically says, this is your last day, buddy. As a child, basically, a young man, younger than the military that is there with him, who are trembling and fearful of engaging this giant. So there's that. Then there's his mighty men, which is amazing. I mean, if this is these are your guys, one guy that's in your crew kills 700 or 800 guys himself in hand-to-hand combat. That's no small feat. And you're the leader of these guys? I mean, it would be real easy, it seems, to be a prideful person. It would be easy to say, look how fantastic I am. And yet he doesn't do it, so I think he's a good example. Anyway, the initiative against despair, Chambers quotes Matthew 26:46, "Rise, let us be going." And then he writes, "The disciples went to sleep when they should have kept awake. And when they realized what they had done, it produced despair. The sense of the irreparable is apt to make us despair. And we say, it is all up now. It is no use trying anymore. If we imagine that this kind of despair is exceptional, we are mistaken. It is a very ordinary human experience. Whenever we realize that we have not done that which we had a magnificent opportunity of doing, then we are apt to sink into despair. And Jesus Christ comes and says, sleep on now. That opportunity is lost forever. You cannot alter it, but arise and go to the next thing. Let the past sleep, but let it sleep on the bosom of Christ and go out into the irresistible future with him. There are experiences like this in each of our lives. We are in despair, the despair that comes from actualities, and we cannot lift ourselves out of it. The disciples in this instance had done a downright unforgivable thing. They had gone to sleep instead of watching with Jesus. But he came with a spiritual initiative against their despair and said, arise and do the next thing. If we are inspired of God, what is the next thing? Rhetorical question. To trust him absolutely and to pray on the ground of his redemption. Never let the sense of failure corrupt your new action. So it's easy to let the sense of failure corrupt your new action, and this sense of despair, the lingering residue of despair, to corrupt your new action and debauch it and ruin it. Essentially, it's far too easy. It's actually challenging not to engage in that kind of false humility. But, you know, again, you see examples like David, which is beautiful and amazing. So hopefully that's a word of encouragement. And something good going into the weekend. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Their appointed duty. They keep trying to tell me, all you want to do is use me. But my answer, on using me until you use me up, until you use me up, my brother.
Welcome back. The religion of these folks, you know, the push is, you know, people are following a leader they don't realize. Again, Charles Baudelaire understood it. People have written about this stuff, and I almost, you know, when it comes to this kind of stuff, I almost feel like, should we mention these things, you know, like the work of the hierarchy and, you know, externalization of the hierarchy, that kind of stuff. But just for what it's worth, you know, people have written about this. What people? There's a book, for example, by Marina Aptikman, published back in 2011, titled Jacob's Ladder, Kabbalistic Allegory in Russian Literature. And it's kind of interesting if you want to stare into the abyss a little bit. And so there is a chapter titled In the Beginning Was the Word, which is a, you know, an allusion to the Bible. Magic Kabbalah, the Occult Revival, and the Linguistic Mysticism of the Silver Age. Neurolinguistic programming has its roots in this kind of, you know, Kabbalistic, metaphysical, occult, esoteric pseudoscience. So, you know, who are you talking about exactly? Well, speaking of Baudelaire, Aptikman writes, the first major source for the would-be adept was French occult writer Alphonse Louis Constant, known mostly under his pseudonym Magus Eliphas Levi, an ex-Catholic priest excommunicated for his left-wing political writings and his interest in necromancy. Remember the cultural Marxists? Levy made a living from his writings and by giving lessons in the occult. Levy was an extremely well-known figure in French occult circles and influenced Charles Baudelaire, you know, the guy who paraphrased in The Usual Suspects, observed, the finest trick of the devil is persuading you that he does not exist. Arthur Rimbaud, Paul Verlaine, and in England, Oscar Wilde. Levy revived and popularized the occult version of Christian Kabbalah, which is an oxymoron, by the way. He did not know Hebrew or Aramaic, and his knowledge of original Jewish texts was based on Latin Christian translations. Most of his writings had no connection with Jewish originals at all, but were based on Renaissance Christian texts on practical Kabbalah and magic, and on the works of Martins de Pasquale. Particularly, one work in particular, I won't butcher it, my French is terrible. Levy also combined Christian Kabbalistic symbolism with 17th and 18th century Masonic and Rosicrucian allegory, which he knew well. And I would say that is a convenient segue to guys like C.S. Lewis. That's, you know, exactly what Lewis's writings amount to. The precisely as Aptikman phrases it, combining Christian Kabbalistic symbolism, which again, Christian Kabbalah is an oxymoron that makes me feel like I need to wash my mouth out with soap when I say it, but Christian Kabbalistic symbolism with 17th and 18th century Masonic and Rosicrucian allegory, and the anthropomorphic element is a not only occult, very occult. You know, the more you get into how that represents the fractured person and the base desires in a man that are represented by the animal, and having that be the head of the person, or, you know, the some other part of the person, is a very occult concept. And so, you know, maybe we'll get into that at some point too. I've mentioned that I've had problems with Lewis before, but I won't dive down that rabbit hole right now. Anyway, people like this, for example. So we will continue on that line when we come back. Stick around.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Back. If today's predominant religion in America, you know, the scientism, the theosophical bent, actually is how I would sort of categorize it. The scientism is part of that. The theosophical bent in particular, the divine wisdom that permeates every aspect of life in America these days, it seems. That predominant religion in America today is solipsistic, morbidly obsessed, morbidly self-obsessed, that is. It is also misanthropic. After all, the organization emulates its leadership, and you can read the misanthropy in so much of the literature that we've been fed over the years. Animal Farm, The Stranger by Camus, Albert Camus, Candide by Voltaire, Gulliver's Travels, Wuthering Heights, The Fall, speaking of Camus, Jackboot Britain, The Misanthrope, obviously, by Moliere, Catcher in the Rye, Lord of the Flies. ...1984, obviously, in the whole collection of dystopian literature, for that matter, really. And so many more. I mean, you can see it kind of a soft, a passive illustration, you know, passive misanthropy, you might call it, and so much more. I mean, it's just a kind of a general distrust of mankind. I mean, you see it in Freudian literature, for example, Civilization and Its Discontents. You see it, obviously, in all things George Bernard Shaw, all things Fabian, really. H.G. Wells, Bertrand Russell, you know, all of the intellectuals. There is this sort of Malthusian infection, you know, and a general distrust and dislike of mankind. And this obsession with getting rid of some of the undesirables. But who decides? That's a relative term. Who decides? So, and you can see it in, I mean, speaking of the Frankfurt School, I've talked, it wasn't that long ago that I talked about specifically like the Frankfurt School and how guys like Adorno talked about the, you know, speaking of that kind of subject matter, you know, how necrophilia and necromancy are sort of the, you know, that's the highest level of enlightenment for mankind, and that's where salvation is. No Exit by Jean-Paul Sartre, you know, literature like this. We've been fed a steady diet of this, and particularly since the second half of the 20th century, since the Frankfurt School really became influential in the West. Now we're obsessed with these things, you know? We're being Nazified. Part of the social justice crowd is giving special rights to aberrant behavior. And how dare you even think about not giving special rights to aberrant behavior, which is, it's a really sinister kind of thing when you do that, and that is beggar thy neighbor. Benefits for one, you know, for the minority at the expense of the majority. Obviously, you're fomenting conflict and strife and civil unrest, and there will be a resentment of those groups toward one another. And if you just keep doing that enough times, that's called balkanization. You're playing these groups off against each other to essentially destroy society. And so, you know, whatever you can find that is the most virulent strain of social provocation, you know, the social justice bent, in this case the cultural Marxist bent, the critical theory stuff. Oh, certain aspects of critical theory provoke you the most? Well, let's focus on that. Let's put that in the media. You know, in certain places around the world, it's things like the Wahhabi Salafi bent. Again, why, you know, if the CIA had good intentions back in the 70s, the late 70s, why did they lean, why did they recruit the radicals? Why did they lean that direction? So, the organization, or the organism in this case, the societal organism, emulates its leadership, and the leadership, the intellectual leadership, has been patently godless and misanthropic, morbidly self-obsessed, obviously, when you think of guys like Jung and Wundt and Skinner and Freud and, you know, Marx and all these guys. Morbidly solipsistic, morbidly self-obsessed, and patently godless, those who have departed from the faith. And so, you know, it seems whatever story the intellectuals want to tell that is convincing and persuasive enough, the masses will adopt. It's a crazy thing. It's a crazy thing to watch. And you can see it in what they write. You know, Karl Marx, we can go to the wiki quote page for Karl Marx, for example, and right at the top, he wrote in The Pale Maiden back in 1837, a ballad, "Thus, heaven, I've forfeited. I know it full well. My soul, once true to God, is chosen for hell." That's what he wrote, speaking of those who have departed from the faith, workers of wrath, workers of iniquity. That's what he wrote. And again, you know, 1837, as quoted in Karl Marx's Life and Thoughts by David McClellan, "With disdain I will throw my gauntlet full in the face of the world and see the collapse of this pygmy giant whose fall will not stifle my ardor. Then I will wander godlike and victorious through the ruins of the world and give my words an active force. I will feel equal to the Creator," with a capital C. So, I mean, there's evidence of this godless religion. Speaking of religion, and so it's no wonder when you read this kind of stuff that, you know, he writes, "Religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature." So you feel victimized, you feel put upon, and so the reaction to that is, you know, the pendulum swings in the opposite direction. But like I said, guys like Breitbart, you know, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and others have made their way through that double-mindedness, that reactionary course, and have found peace and a single-mindedness and a steadfast resoluteness. And that is dangerous, because if everyone starts emulating that, then we don't have all of this conflict. We realize that we make choices, and then we make peace with the choices that we make. And if we make poor choices, we realize that we have been a part of that, and so in the future we make better choices and we make peace with all of that. We become more honest with ourselves and, you know, feel much less victimized, generally speaking. So there's more. I'll give you some more examples from Marx himself, because I think they are instructive. But for now, let's go to the phones. Patrick in Texas, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Patrick.
Can you hear me all right, Chris?
No, Chris? Just kidding.
I listened to an hour and a half lecture on how the JFK assassination by the top researchers. One of them was Jim Mars, who grew up in Texas and knew that area even during 50 years. To put it to the bottom line is, the congressman looked into it, and he says they got the intelligence has its fingerprints all over it. Military intelligence, FBI, CIA, all of it. In other words, they're all complicit. They're all in on this. And Jim Morris sums it all up, is that it's Rockefeller who was running full-page ads against JFK, and of course it's Rothschild, the ultimately the owner. So there's that. You know, this nation has been conquered way before JFK was just basically trying to put the brakes on it. It's debatable when it all actually started. But backing up, who are all these characters? Well, they're the masters. They've managed to bamboozle their way into all governments through their bribery and their central banking systems. And their law was, you could say the cabal, the Talmud, the Talmud is the most voluminous. That's filled up a whole shelf wall full of books to cover all the multiple volumes, and it's really, really, it's like porn, the stuff they talk about. And some of their top rabbis, Schmierson, Herzl, all of them. We have a shadow of a doubt. We're nothing but cattle for them to be bought and sold. And then, so they do. They set up, under Benjamin Disraeli, they bought and sold the English. Back in the 1500s, 16, right after our Civil War, 1668 to 1880, he was prime minister. So that was right at the Civil War. Yeah.
To sort of piece things together a little bit, it reminds me of Alan Watt talking about Tony Martin and his research and scholarly research. And I wonder if you could still find it on YouTube. Jewish people are not the real, well, anyway, this idea of slavery, you're not supposed to tell this story. Tony Martin is one of the leading guys that, you know, if you start going down that rabbit hole, you'll see. It's interesting how, you know, the victim psychopathy is used to divert attention away from the unsavory truth that, yeah, there are certain people who also participated in the slave trade to a large extent. But, you know, I also would kind of balance what you're saying with, Bill Cooper. I mean, sure, there is, you know, like he put it, I think, right. He put it best, you know, he goes, it's not the Jews, it's really? The, you know, these there attendees of the mystery words, schools and so forth.
I think I understand what you're saying there, to balance it out. They're all dealt in slavery. Well, that is true, but we're not as organized as they are, and they're not as vicious, I would say. You can see how they treat the their neighbors around there. They don't mess around. If you put up a resistance, they double down and get terrorizers. They've decided they was going to conquer the world a long time ago with the learned elders of Zion, and they put it down. Marx puts it down, in writing, and says it. And all of the rabbis, the big ones, Smearson, they'll tell you. They pretend that they're following the Bible, but they're really not.
That's been my point all along in mentioning this subject matter. And it's usually when the Bible is mentioned, it's for very selfish and even nefarious purposes, and that's a misrepresentation of it and misappropriation of context, which is why I always mention John 8, and that's, I think, frankly, why some people get upset and they read in 1 Corinthians 13 about love, which is a beautiful description of love, and then see the opposite of that, you know, in the outworking of things, and then, you know, they arrive at the bumper sticker, God save me from your people, and throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. And that's part of the general reactionary movement that Pike wrote about as well. It's planned.
Now, Pike, he's the one who wrote Morals and Dogma, and he's like Aleister Crowley. He claimed he wanted Lucifer to be their patron saint, you know, Mazzini in Italy wanted Satan. Well,
right.
Pike won.
Right.
But they don't tell everybody that. They keep that, you know, under wraps.
Right. We're headed into a break. We're heading into a break. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Ease-Off.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
As an aside, I can't help mentioning, speaking of Kennedy and the Kennedy assassination, folks who had become steadfast and resolute, I think, you know, he was saying, my understanding is basically, you know, Skull and Bones was running Vietnam behind his back in simple terms. And, you know, among other escapades, you know, Zapata comes to mind and things south of the border, so to speak. But, It's interesting, you know, the Kennedy assassination conspiracy theories, which are numerous and voluminous, designed to be hiding the truth out in plain sight. You know, you got to obfuscate with the volume of misinformation and misdirection. It's interesting to me that I think the gatekeepers have sort of remained out in plain sight. One of those who is provocatively curious to me is a guy named Darwin Payne. I've talked about Darwin Payne in the past, the author of Initiatives in Energy about Dresser Industries, which is a curious company, speaking of the Bush company, the Bush family, and Halliburton, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, that whole history. It's interesting that Darwin Payne mentions that, you know, you don't, those who know about Skull and Bones, Dane, speak of it, and yet he mentions four Skull and Bonesmen on the same two pages. At least four, I should say. So that's interesting. And this is the guy who boasts about being a young reporter on scene there in Dallas. How did this happen? He was, you know, basically, as I understand it, here is kind of the smoking gun. You know, he immediately, when the Kennedy White House announces Kennedy's trip to Dallas, that was when, I believe, like, you know, that was when Darwin Payne was transferred and assigned this job. And he's a fledgling journalist who's going to cover the president. Okay, I guess. But then where it really gets curious is he's the guy who boasts about talking to Abraham Zapruder. And to this day, he says, I still have his personal notes. I have his little notebook that he gave me. Why on earth would Abraham Zapruder give him, this young fledgling journalist, his personal notebook? I don't know. It's weird. Last thing on that. Even the United States House Select Committee on Assassinations back in the mid-70s, investigating JFK, Martin Luther King, concluded that Kennedy was probably assassinated as a result of a conspiracy. But, you know, the committee also went on to state that it did not involve any organized crime group, anti-Castro group, nor FBI or CIA or Secret Service. And so I guess it was just... You know, remember the Family Circus cartoon, Not Me? It was Not Me. The invisible character of Not Me. Anyway, the FBI Technical Services Division and National Academy of Sciences also determined that reliable acoustic data do not support a conclusion that there was a second gunman, and concluded that no persuasive evidence can be identified to support a theory of conspiracy in the assassination of Kennedy. So see the double-mindedness? It's like Fred Hampton observed. You'll come up with answers that don't answer, explanations that don't explain. You'll come up with conclusions that don't conclude. That's how you stay in that analysis paralysis of double-mindedness. The double-bind, as Bateson called it. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll go to the phones when we come back.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.